Good morning, Mendocino. This is Jeff Blankford welcoming you to the July 27th edition of Takes on the World, a public affairs program that comes your way the second and fourth Wednesdays of every month and every other fifth Wednesday when I open the phones to you, our listeners. Well, last Friday, we awakened with the news of what appeared to be a terrorist bombing of government buildings in central Oslo in Norway. As could have been predicted, the U.S. and Western media, as well as President Obama, assumed it to be the work of Al-Qaeda or another Muslim group, and the major news media did not hesitate a moment in declaring that to the world, despite the fact that this was not the conclusion of Norwegian authorities. The killer, of course, was not a Muslim, but someone who considered them his mortal enemy and the enemy of white Western civilization, Anders Behring Breivik, a 32-year-old blonde Norwegian who went on to murder 68 Norwegian school children, many of them from immigrant families, before being arrested. Even then, some of the same media were slow to change their story, perhaps since making a bad guy out of an anti-Muslim, pro-Israel white supremacist came a little too close to the bone. Apparently, buying into the same mindset, NPR's Morning Edition on Monday arranged to have a Muslim commentator on to explain that Islam was not necessarily a violent religion. Perhaps one day NPR can interview a spokesperson for Western civilization, or at least America's version of it, to argue that it is not inherently violent, but that would be somewhat difficult at the moment since President Obama has now us involved in five wars, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Yemen, Somalia, and Libya, Iraq, a record for Nobel Prize winners. That four of those wars are being waged largely with Predator and Reaper drones that don't require a live pilot, at least in the air, seems to have lulled most Americans, including what there is of an anti-war movement, to sleep. Those wars, it should be remembered, are all being waged against predominantly Muslim countries, something that no doubt gladdened the heart of the Norwegian terrorist, Mr. Breivik. Today, at about 20 minutes past the hour, I'll be speaking with Professor Vishay Prashad from Trinity College about both subjects because they are intrinsically linked. Breivik, as you may have heard or read, put together a 1,500-word manifesto, much of it lifted from the pages of the Unabomber Ted Kaczynski, except that he had substituted either cultural Marxist or multiculturalist, whereas Kaczynski had used leftist. He also relied heavily on it for his anti-Muslim screed on U.S.-based websites, of which there is no shortage. Just the day before the bombing and massacre, the online magazine Front Page, published by the former Trotskyist-turned-neocon David Horowitz, published an article by Joseph Klein entitled, quote, "The Quislings of Norway," which claimed Norway is effectively under the occupation of anti-Semitic leftists and radical Muslims and appears willing to help enable the destruction of the Jewish state of Israel. The infamous Norwegian Vidkun Quisling, who assisted Nazi Germany as it conquered his own country, wrote Klein, must be applauding in his grave, end quote. It is not surprising that the person most quoted by Breivik in his manifesto, Robert Spencer, is a regular columnist for Horowitz's Front Page, which yesterday produced a long article in his defense. It's also the sponsor of his Jihad Watch blog. The same attitude apparently also could be found in Israel, which disturbed J.J. Goldberg of the Jewish Weekly Forward, who wrote in his blog, quote, "The Norway massacre has touched off the nasty war of words on the Israeli internet over the meaning of the event and its implications for Israel." And I do mean nasty, he said. Judging by the comments section on the main Hebrew websites, the main questions under debate seem to be whether Norwegians deserve any sympathy from Israelis given the country's pro-Palestinian policies, whether the killer deserves any sympathy, given his self-declared intention of fighting Islamic extremism, and perhaps ironically, whether calling attention to this debate is in itself an anti-Israel or anti-Semitic act. The debate, wrote Goldberg, exploded up above ground on Saturday in an opinion essay at Israel's most widely read paper and website, Ynet, in Hebrew only, by Ziv Lenschner, a left-leaning Tel Aviv artist and one of Ynet's large bipartisan staple of columnists. It's called Dancing the Horror on Norwegian Blood, in which he argued that the comments section on news websites are a fair barometer of public sentiment, a point at which the Forwards Goldberg agreed, citing a number of examples. His article has drawn hundreds of responses that fall into four basic categories in roughly equal proportions, wrote Goldberg. 1. Hooray, the Norwegians had it coming. 2. What happened is horrible, but maybe now they'll understand what we're up against. 3. What happened is horrible and the celebrations here are appalling. And 4. This article is a bunch of lies. Ziv Lenschner invented the whole Schadenfreude thing because he's a lying leftist who wants to destroy Israel. End quote. One of the Norwegian killer's main sources of inspiration turned out to be a Palestinian American named Walid Shobat. Shobat has been drawing a salary from the U.S. government and handsome honorariums from Jewish groups who welcome his pro-Israel anti-Muslim views by pretending he is a former terrorist who served time in an Israeli prison and who has now seen the light and who was recently exposed on CNN as a complete fraud. Shobat, who sold himself as a terrorism expert to Washington, which has paid him to train law enforcement in counterterrorism, is cited more than 15 times in Breivik's manifesto, particularly in regard to how immigration from Muslim countries threatens the West. Quote, Breivik, this is why the face of Islamic fundamentalism in the West has a facade that Islam is a peaceful religion. He cites Shobach as saying, because they are waiting to have more Islamic immigrants, they are waiting to increase in number, waiting to increase their political power, end quote. And what about the likelihood of an Anders Breivik or another Timothy McVeigh on the home front? Well, in 2009, the Department of Homeland Security did put out an important report on the threat of right-wing extremism, but it was, well, quote, withdrawn by the department after criticism from conservatives, end quote. And according to the author of the report, who did not who no longer works at Department of Homeland Security, quote, the number of analysts assigned to non-Islamic militancy of all kinds was reduced to 2 from 6, end quote. We'll be discussing this later when I speak with Professor Prashad. Yesterday afternoon, Politico.com site, citing a story by Fox Business, reported that while officials from the Obama administration raised their rhetoric over the weekend about the possibility of a debt default if the debt ceiling isn't raised, they privately have been telling top executives at major U.S. banks that such an event won't happen. This is a big reason why, though Wall Street has been jittery, the markets haven't imploded, as would be the case, many economists fear, if the nation missed a payment on its debt. Without seeing what the president gives up, we won't know whether we should worry or celebrate. Given that he has had more than enough opportunities to do so, President Obama has never told the public the truth about Social Security, that it pays for itself and does not come out of the federal budget. And he has shown his willingness to betray the American people on almost every other issue. Supporting same-sex marriage and gays serving openly in the military is important to many people, but it's not one of the critical issues facing our country today. Besides, we should be about downsizing the military, not opening its ranks to more cannon fodder. On my last program, you will recall, I reported on a law that had been passed overwhelmingly by the Israeli Knesset that now makes it a crime for anyone in Israel to speak favorably or even report on the boycotting of an Israeli firm, whether it is Israel or the occupied West Bank, which allows the business targeted to seek damages against any person or organization that can be seen as promoting the boycott without having to show any proof of damages. With the exception of the uber right-wing Zionist Organization of America, the legislation has been criticized by leading American Jewish organizations as a curb on free speech, even though they strongly oppose the boycott, sanctions, and divestment movement. Now, as if in empathy or simply following instructions from his Tel Aviv masters, veteran Southern California Democrat and Israel firster Howard Berman has introduced in Congress the Anti-Boycott Act, which he describes as, quote, the first major update and improvement of the 35-year-old law that prohibits U.S. persons and firms from cooperating with demands from the Arab League governments to refrain from doing business with Israel, end quote. Berman's real targets, however, are not companies that might adhere to the Arab boycott, which is largely observed in the breach, but those in the U.S. that are being targeted by the boycott, sanctions, and divestment movement, as indicated by a sly statement that, quote, this authority would apply to any other boycott that is imposed against U.S. friends and allies, end quote. This would presumably include markets and co-ops that might elect not to sell Israeli products. The bill would update the penalties under the existing boycott law. Those knowingly committing violations would be punished by fines up to $1 million and up to 20 years in prison. Several years ago, at a public meeting in the San Fernando Valley District, Berman declared that the main reason he had run for Congress 30 years ago was to work for Israel, and he has lived up to his commitment. He faces a dilemma in the next election because the congressional redistricting that follows every census is being done by elected commission and no longer by his brother Michael. Yes, you heard me right, by his brother Michael, who runs a consulting firm. And with the increase of Latino voters in his Valley District, he may be forced to go head-to-head with a fellow member of Congress, an Israeli firster, Brad Sherman. This has upset Jennifer Laszlo Mizrahi of the Israel Project, a Jewish organization that bamboozles the media and has 32 members of Congress on its advisory board, among them Berman and Sherman. Mizrahi was quoted in the LA Jewish Journal as saying, quote, "It's very unfair the way the California redistricting process is having stalwart supporters of Israel being forced to run against each other," end quote. Ms. Mizrahi, along with a large number of other folks, needs to be reminded that Berman and Sherman are members of the U.S. Congress and not the Israeli Knesset, and Berman and Sherman need to be reminded of it as well. Although Israel was able to effectively stop the Gaza flotilla from approaching Gaza waters this year, it still faces a problem from last year's slaying in May of 8 Turkish and 1 Turkish-American activist on the Mavi Marmara, which was invaded by Israeli commandos in international waters as it sought to break Israel's blockade of Gaza. The Turkish President Recep Erdogan has insisted there will be no resumption of diplomatic relations between the two countries until Israel issues a formal apology for the killing of its citizens. The Obama administration predictably has ignored the murder of the American since it was done by Israel. As we have seen in the past, being Israeli means you never say you're sorry. Now Israel apparently does have something to worry about. The Turkish newspaper Hurriyet said on Sunday that a UN report on last year's attack expected to be released this week. According to the newspaper, the UN-appointed panel to investigate the raid on the Mavi Marmara has ruled that IDF soldiers boarded the ship with an intent to kill. The Turkish daily claimed that this assertion is what prompted a debate within Israel's government on whether the Jewish state should issue an apology to Turkey, which it has thus far refused to do. According to the article, Israel is considering compensating the families of the 9 people killed aboard the ship and intends to issue a statement regretting the loss of life, regardless of Turkey's demand for an official apology. As they have watched Israel rapidly losing popularity among all the mainstream churches, the American Jewish establishment has felt obliged to get over its previous aversion to pro-Israel Christian evangelists and embrace a group whose positions on almost every social issue, are totally opposed to those of the majority of America's Jews. This was demonstrated last week at the National Conference in Washington of Christians United for Israel, or CUFI, the largest Christian Zionist movement, attended by 5,000 of its members, which will be stepping up its activity on two issues at the top of the pro-Israel agenda, fighting what they call efforts to delegitimize Israel and working on college campuses to counter anti-Israel activity. In the Jewish Weekly Forward, Nathan Gutman noted that, quote, "Kufi's acceptance as an essential part of the pro-Israel community was palpable in his 3-day conference. The signs were abundant, ranging from the live satellite greeting by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, a gesture many Jewish groups still fight to obtain, to the noted presence of top officials in the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC, plus Malcolm Hohnlein, Executive Vice Chair of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, who offered enthusiastic support for the group and its leader, the Reverend John Hagee. With 700,000 supporters, CUFI is the largest pro-Israel organization in America. The conference's main attraction was the newest CUFI member, TV demagogue Glenn Beck, who reportedly teared up time and again while invoking the memory of the Holocaust. What brought the crowd to its feet for a lengthy standing ovation, which included the waving of the Israeli-American flags, was Beck's pledge to stand by Israel at any cost. "Today," he said, "I declare, count me a Jew and come for me first. Let us declare, I am a Jew," and the crowd cheered. Beck will be taking his show on the road to Israel next month, where he's planning to stage a major rally in Jerusalem. And one more thing about Mr. Beck, when disclosing the attack and discussing the attack in Oslo, he compared the children massacred in the Labour Party youth camp to the Hitler Youth.